Police have long established the connection between domestic violence and murder. But as John Yang tells us, a new analysis by the Washington Post finds domestic violence plays an even larger role in the deaths of far too many women. The numbers are staggering. Nearly half, 46% of more than 4,400 women killed in the past decade died at the hands of an intimate partner.
Judy, Post reporters analyzed data from 47 major U.S. cities. And in a closer examination of homicides in five of those cities, the reporters found that more than a third of the men implicated in a domestic killing were known to be potential threats. They had a previous restraining order against them or had been convicted of a domestic abuse or of a violent crime, including murder. And police told the Post reporters that attempted strangulation is a strong indicator that an abusive relationship could turn deadly. Katie Zesma was the lead reporter of the Post team who traveled around the country on this story, and she's with us now. Katie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Were you surprised at all by the volume, just the sheer numbers that you found in your reporting?
We were. I mean, it's a huge amount of women who are killed by their intimate partners. I mean, it's really reaching crisis level. It's nearly half, and, you know, as people have told us, is probably much larger than what we have already found. So if what we found is 46%, that's just a huge number of women who are killed each year by their intimate partner.
And you told some really harrowing stories in this article. Is there one case in particular that sort of stands out to you that sort of typifies the issues you found?
There's a case of a woman in Fort Worth. Her name is Minerva Cisneros. And she arrived at the hospital one day, and she was 8 months pregnant. She had strangulation marks around her neck. She had a bloody lip, bloody nose. She had a busted lip. And, you know, the authorities say that her common law husband abused her and, you know, was participated in this abuse that sent her to the hospital. The case kind of languished for a little while, and once it was picked back up, the you know, police arrested the common law husband. Minerva had already given birth to her third child by this point, and she decided she did not want to pursue charges against her husband. A CPS case had been opened up, which alleged that she
Child Protective Services
case was opened up, you know, alleging that she failed to protect her two older children from the abuse that they witnessed, and she feared losing her kids, so she decided not to press charges against him, and a grand jury did not indict him. About 15 months later, on Christmas morning, their house was decorated for Christmas. It smelled like the brisket she had made the night before and the pozole, a Mexican stew she had made the night before. Their 911 call was put in. The common law husband said, you know, a gun went off. I don't know what happened. The police got there. Minerva was shot once in the chest. She was dead. The baby was alive lying next to her, and police alleged that her husband shot and killed her.
You said she went to the hospital with strangulation marks around her neck. Police said that's really the leading indicator that this could turn violent.
It
turned deadly?
Yes. Police and prosecutors and people who work with domestic violence are now looking at attempted strangulation as a huge warning sign. They say that women whose husbands or boyfriends or intimate partners attempted to strangle them have a much higher instance of being killed by that intimate partner. They're training people across the spectrum to look for the warning signs of strangulation, which you might not think. Oftentimes, there are no outward signs, but, you know, women might have a hoarse voice, or they might have bloodshot eyes, or they might be very confused because they've lost oxygen to their brain. So they're really trying to look for those signs right now. And prosecutors in Tarrant County, you know, knowing what they know now, they're trying to intervene earlier in these cases. They believe that a case like Minerva Cisneros is, you know, she may have lived if they had intervened earlier.
In the story, you say that restraining orders are often officials or police tell victims that's the first step. But as you say, it doesn't sound like they really result in anything.
Yeah, so, you know, often it is the first step, it's the most basic step that women are told to do, which is file a restraining order. But oftentimes, it creates a flashpoint in the relationship where the abuser, you know, gets set off and gets agitated by the filing of this and can lash out in violence that can often be fatal. One prosecutor we spoke with said that she tells women to file a restraining order with a backpack and a plan to get out of town, to leave once she files the restraining order. You know, one woman who works with victims, you know, said it pretty bluntly, that it's not a bulletproof vest, that it can only protect you, you know, in so many ways. And really, the only way that they're enforced is when the abuser violates the restraining order, and, you know, and that could be a case of fatal violence.
And you also say, as we've been talking about, so many of these cases, there have been warning signs. The cases have been telegraphed. Why is nothing done, or why do these things still happen?
Well, you know, these cases are very, very complex. A lot of the times, women don't want to report their abuse for many reasons, or they don't want to press charges. You know, they love them. There's also the financial component. They could be the breadwinner in the family. They might not want to lose custody of their children. There's a, you know, myriad of reasons why women don't want to file abuse charges against their loved ones. You know, a lot of times, these red flags also aren't in the public domain. They're threats behind closed doors. They're death threats. They're things that, you know, close people around the couple may know, but may not be in the public record.
You also talk about a jurisdiction where they're trying to fix things. They're making strides. Tarrant County, Texas, which is where Fort Worth is. What are they doing there?
One of the things that they're doing is prosecuting cases without the victim's consent. So victims will often say, you know, I don't want to prosecute. And the prosecutors will say, okay, we understand that, but we're going to take this case forward anyway. And they use that, they do that using, you know, evidence such as medical records, medical reports, witness interviews, that sort of thing, and they prosecute the case on the victim's behalf, even though she doesn't want to go forward with it.
Katie Zesma, The Washington Post, thank you very much. A very disturbing story, but a very important one as well.
Thanks for having me.
And if you or someone you know is the victim of domestic violence, experts suggest four ways to get help. Contact police, seek medical help, call a helpline like the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7232. The number's there on your screen. And a helpline should be able to put you in touch with a domestic violence shelter in your area.